Bud Davis, huh?
My real name is Buford Ewan Davis, but they don't call me Buford no more. Except my grandmom on my daddy's side, she still calls me Buford, but she's half Indian. They call me Bud because my initials B-U-D. Buford Ewan Davis spells Bud.
I can spell, boy.
I got a thumb, I got a middle finger. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. Film Sack, episode 249, the podcast that mines the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson, joined tonight by Brian. Nothing sexier than spitting brown goo in a beer bottle, Dunaway.
I see that all the time. Oh, hey. During my research this week for our Film Sack movie, I found rumors on the dark web about an extended edition of this film that exists beyond the grueling 135 minutes. Thanks, Randy. And may be released soon on VHS for the 35th anniversary celebration of its theatrical release. All kinds of excited. The story picks up right after Sissy Bud. That's what the celebrity mags are calling the couple. Well, they arrive back at their single wide, and Bud starts slapping Sissy around after drinking a little too much bourbon, because he's the bourbon cowboy. Well, Bud gets sent to prison and finally realizes his month-long dream of becoming a prison rodeo bull rider. But his dream is short-lived when Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor show up and make Bud a part of their prison escape plan. Successful prison break leads the three right back to Gillies, where hilarity ensues. No, wait. I should have finished reading the article. That's the story to stir crazy.
You had me at bourbon cowboy.
The bourbon cowboy.
That's amazing. Also with us, Randy Accidental Slap Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. And Mr. Gilly, thanks for meeting with us. My team has carefully considered your request to make a 2-plus-hour-long commercial for your honky-tonk, and I think we can do it. We just have a few notes here for you before we get started. Number one, the name of the movie. We disagree that it should be named Come to Gillies. We also dislike your backup name, Best Little Saloon in Pasadena. We'd like to see you name the movie something that points our direction at the main character, like, let's call it Country Boy in the City, or Neighborhood Redneck, or Metropolitan Bull Rider, or something like that. You can see what we're looking for. Number two, your insistence that every scene start and end and take place in the middle of some country performer performing in your club. It just seems weird to have the characters living inside the club. They should have homes of their own. The homes could be on wheels. You know what I mean.
Yeah.
Finally, number three, despite your insistence on this point, you need to know we're not on the cusp of some sort of major shift to people wanting to watch performers on something like television. This is 1980, sir. Music on television ain't gonna happen.
Nicely done. And yeah, it was long. I remember you saying before the show that was a long one. That was long. I liked it, though. Don't go changing. Finally with us, Brian Scott Glenn Crotch Sweat helps me ride better Ibbit.
All right, bud. Make sure you keep an eye on the guy controlling the bull. If you say, we're gonna have this accent.
I love that we all three had the southern accent.
Mm-hmm. Bud, you gotta make sure you keep an eye on the guy controlling the bull. If you see him move the joystick left, you gotta put your weight on the right side. If you see him move it up, you gotta keep your right hand in the air. And if you see him move it up, up, down, down, left, right, B, A, then he's gonna open up a new level where he teaches Daredevil how to fight.
Nice. Yeah, good stick reference. Well done. Man, he was ripped. Holy crap.
He was. And greased up.
Greasy. Yeah. Greasy. Sweaty and greasy all the time. That's Scott Glenn. The movie we're talking about is Urban Cowboy. Mm-hmm. Or as Brian put it so well, Bourbon Cowboy. It's pretty good. It's a movie I remember coming out and seemed like it was a huge deal when I was a lot younger and didn't ever see it. So probably because it was, I'm guessing this was rated R and I was too young for my parents to let me see that yet. Right. And
this is high on the heels of his Saturday Night Fever, right?
Yeah, right after, right?
Yeah.
Big swing to the other side of music, for sure.
Right, he was the Channing Tatum of his time.
What? Yeah. That's an interesting thing to compare him to. I guess he kind of is.
If you can dance, it doesn't matter about anything else, because I'm telling you, that's how he started his whole career.
I know Channing Tatum's a big deal now, but don't you think Channing Tatum enjoys a lower profile than Travolta always did when he was in his younger years? Maybe self-imposed. I'm not saying he couldn't.
Travolta was on television at a time when television made you a bit bigger by just happenstance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Like Welcome Back, Carter days.
Yeah,
there was a lot less to compete with, but also I just get the feeling Tatum's quieter by nature, would rather sort of not necessarily be in everyone's face all the time, and I felt like Travolta was pretty on fire back then and kind of excited to be in whatever you threw at him. And
yeah, but I mean, you look at, you mentioned Saturday Night Fever, also between that and this movie was Grease.
Oh, and, right.
It is the word.
And having him doing almost three consecutive movies, it was moment by moment in the middle of that, but three almost consecutive movies featuring three very different styles of dancing, but very prominently featuring dancing.
Dancing.
It's almost like Steven Seagal being in a movie where he does karate, and then another movie where he does mixed martial arts, and then another movie where he does kickboxing or something.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
Yeah, there's a big shock.
But also imagine if Seagal had been on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia at the same time. Like, right. No, seriously. Well,
he had that show for a while, didn't he?
But much later, right?
Yeah, about that show. Was that a reality show? Come on.
Yeah, that was a reality show.
Yeah, he was a
quote
cop.
Quote, reality.
Steven Seagal's version of Cops. It's really easy to compare Travolta to Chris Pratt, I think is the perfect comparison. You have somebody who's young, came out of nowhere on a TV show, but it's not like that, like, sent them an Oscar or something.
Someone checking their silverware?
Is somebody reassembling a Luger?
What is that sound? It sounds like silverware. Someone's putting out a placement. All right, we're going to let Fletcher explain more. The movie is Urban Cowboy. Scott Fletcher is the man.
Urban Cowboy. In this slice of life tale, country boy Bud Davis leaves the farm behind and heads to a Houston suburb, where he soon gravitates to a cavernous honky-tonk with a mechanical bull and fast women, including a husky-voiced flirt he impetuously weds.
All right. I don't know if I'd call her a husky-voiced flirt. Would you say that about Deborah Winger? I wouldn't.
No.
Why didn't we just call her including so-and-so played by Deborah Winger?
Yeah, I don't know.
Why doesn't she get named there?
These Netflix descriptions are pretty weird. Mm-hmm. Deborah Winger, in her first major role, not her first movie, but her first major role as like a leading person in it. Right. I really, really liked her in it.
A lot.
Yeah. Like a whole lot I liked her in it. And I went to it thinking, all right, let me back up. When this came out when I was a kid, I had zero interest in it because it was about cowboy stuff. And I couldn't yet appreciate, and not just cowboy stuff, but like modern cowboy stuff. People living in cities and then being cowboys at night.
Right, wearing cowboy hats in 1980.
Yeah.
That just seems ridiculous.
I'm into cowboys on actual bulls. I don't really care so much for the ones on the fake bulls.
And like, and Scott, did you when he gets to Pasadena and one of the first things he does is go to a rodeo? Did you think, oh wait a minute, this might be a movie about an actual cowboy?
I really did for a half a second, but when he pulled up to the city, I went, oh okay, this isn't going my way. But then, I don't know, I got kind of turned around. I kind of enjoyed this movie like a lot. I think the ending was way too tight and cleaned up and easy. And there were some problems I have just kind of in general, like when he was hanging from the scaffolding, I thought that was just terribly done. And there's a lot of fake drama created in some places. But there are parts of this movie that really had me going, like really had me into the characters. I'm buying their little slice of life. It's a different kind of lifestyle. They're living in trailers and they live for the night where they go to the honky tonk and do the fake bull and listen to Charlie Daniels. And, you know, there's whatever the lure was, I think I got it. And I kind of enjoyed it in the end. I think the acting was good and the storytelling was good. And outside of a few, you know, tropey tropes and some bad music mixed in with some pretty good music.
Bad music, what?
Well, look, most of their licensed stuff, pretty good, pretty fun.
Right.
But what was that song, Brian, you were talking about? The
Buzzcocks, Love, Look What You've Done to Me.
That shouldn't be in a country movie.
No.
No, the Eagles were in there. It was... it was kind of stretched pretty far for country music, but man, there were some good songs. Sure. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, and I'll even say, I kind of like that, that Buzzkag song too, but
I like it in an ironic way. You don't really like it though, right? Like it can't, it's not good.
Right. No, I mean, it's that late 70s, early 80s, AM radio pop that,
that my dad
grew up on. Yeah.
That my dad listened to his truck's AM radio, with the big buttons that flashed it forward and back. It was stuck on a country station at all times. I knew every song in this movie. I knew every musical artist because it was like a trip back in time.
Yeah.
And it's just like something that kind of died in the 90s. Mm-hmm. I feel like Garth Brooks killed something.
Well, kind of, yeah. Right? I mean, it took
a big swing. Yeah.
Yeah. That re-electrification of country that happened in the mid 90s, early to mid 90s, that kind of changed it.
Yeah. I call that the I love it, I like it, I want some more of it, or however the hell that goes. That's everything sounds like
it's
that.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere phase of country.
Yeah. It's a sad time, really, because there was still this great mix before that. And I think somewhat now that there's kind of a broader stage for a lot of different kind of acts and different kind of musical tastes, there's a return to the more grassroots stuff. Mm-hmm. And I really always have enjoyed that. Like, I love bluegrass and I like country influenced by bluegrass, and there's a bunch of this in this movie, and I like songs that tell really stupid stories. It's almost like they're heavy metal, so like the song about the devil and the fiddle and all one of the greatest things ever made. I mean,
it is.
Would there be like, I'm not even sure Jack Black and Kyle Gass would have had a hit with Greatest Song in the World or Tribute or whatever the hell it's called, without that song. Like, that song is like the parent to his thing. It's
Robert
very
Johnson,
similar.
The tale of Robert Johnson, blues. Robert Johnson, blues guy who came to the crossroads and the devil gave him his skill. Kind of is the great grandfather then of this stuff. But
yeah, fair enough. But I knew you'd know more history than this. I'm always so reductive on this because I don't know. But you know what I mean? Like that old tradition of a story that's more epic than just.
Yes.
I don't know why she don't love me no more. Not like that.
And I'm going to bring up my dad over and over, but I had to sit in his truck and listen to this music all my childhood. And my dad would say, as things changed, Kenny Rogers had a song in this movie, but Kenny Rogers was the problem as far as my dad was concerned. Cause as the 80s went on,
true story,
as the 80s went on, Kenny Rogers went from doing what you're supposed to do, which is tell a story. That's called we call it a ballad if we're trying to come up with a word for the genre.
Gambler and Turn the Other Cheek or whatever that is.
And then one day Kenny Rogers stopped telling stories.
Yeah.
And he just started telling ideas. Mm. And my dad was done with country music. Yeah. That was the end of it.
Interesting. Right.
Wow.
I like that he was the impetus for his for him falling away from it.
Well,
there.
But they all did, you know. Like one of my favorites from the late 80s was Steve Warner. Mm. He mixed between telling a story and just giving you an idea. Mm. And I made the transition, but older generations couldn't, and country music just kind of changed.
Who does "I'm Gonna Love You Forever"? Who's that?
Randy Travis.
Like... So I feel like Randy Travis kind of swung it back a little bit. And say what about the, you know, drunk wife beating weirdo he is today, but his music was kind of a throwback to the stuff that your dad liked.
It didn't feel like it came from the 90s, right? Mm-hmm. It felt like it was an oldie, an old country song refreshed.
Yeah, written for a new generation that could appreciate it on both sides and whatever. But this music's full of that weird dichotomy of like, oops, this sucks, or wow, that was kind of rad.
And the point of this movie is to advertise Gilly's Bar. And so Mickey Gilly is front and center in this thing, even though he's never given more than one line. It was really amazing to see that they gave a beauty shot of the signage all the time. They made the inside of that club look huge and beautiful, like the kind of place you just want to go two-stepping. And you just keep seeing Mickey Gilly. He's in almost every shot on the interior. Like, would you please? I can't imagine what he paid.
How's Mickey Gilly pouring me a drink right now when he's up on stage too?
Yeah, it was exactly like that.
He was the
Stanley of this movie.
Yeah, and you need to appreciate that, because the movie could have been awful. It was bad, but it could have been wretched and they somehow managed to make a movie alongside an ad for that club.
Yeah, I kind of got suckered in for it. I don't know. I don't know what I expected. I guess I had low expectations, and I kind of liked it.
I think this is kind of like it felt like Rocky, kind of like a Rocky movie. It's just you can't help but to cheer a little bit, and the relationships are insane. You've never been in a relationship that was so childish as this one is, down to the root of it. We've kind of experienced some of it.
Sure. But okay, you brought up a big point or important point, and that is rooting for them or the Rocky part. Because the Rocky part in Rocky is he's going to be a boxer and he's going to beat Apollo Creed and we're all going to get stoked. Mm-hmm. This movie, this is where it kind of loses me and also probably lost me when I was a kid when I was asked to see it and I didn't care to. It's the idea that people would be this into a fake mechanical bull.
Right.
It's like saying, well, can I... It to me, it's equivalent of saying, I want to go be in the World Series of Poker, or I want to sit in front of a video poker machine.
Right.
Like, that's
a good combination or comparison.
Silly.
It was definitely a phase, and they kind of played that because Gillies went through a lot of phases. It was like, hey, 1 week is the see how hard you can create a lawsuit by punching this ball.
And that's the thing, right? I mean, that's the similar thing where it's, no, we don't want you to fight. Like, it's not a boxing match. Just hit this fake thing.
Yeah.
Just like you're going to go ride that fake thing over there.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about this trope before, and I think it's really fun to identify as quickly as you can in a movie the weirdness where there's something that the main character gets interested in and you find out everybody else is interested in it. Mm-hmm. It's Wesley Snipes skydiving or it's surfing or whatever the thing that like – movies do this and it can really work where you're swept into the world and the next thing you know you feel like, oh wow, I kind of want to spend all my time practicing bull riding too. Like,
well, here's the nearest
not even once I want a honky tonk.
Oh, poor Brian Dunaway.
I mean, the comparison for me, it would be like, I kept thinking about, well, when I used to see the movie The Wizard, I used to just laugh and go, yeah, right. Like, everyone's going to gather together and watch people competitively play a video game. And here we are today in a time where everybody is really into people competitively playing video games. We take it seriously. I'm way into it. Like, esports is a thing. Maybe, just maybe, I'm willing to admit this, it's just esports for cowboys. You know what I mean?
I agree. That I 100% agree with you on that. I mean, culture.
Because the culture accepted it. It propped it up, made it rad for them. Well, who am I to say that that's a stupid thing compared to, you know, playing StarCraft in front of a room full of people, you know?
Right. So were we looking at a renaissance for country music and honky tonks during that time? I mean, we were trying to get out of disco. And was that like one of the places people were going?
I don't know. What's the other movie? Tex? Remember Tex?
I don't remember Tex. That sounds twice as bad as what we watched.
Tex movie. Hold on. We're going to tell you, we're going to give you a little reference point for this. Tex the film, 1982. So it's just after this.
So this is like the follow-up. Your grandma would get you this for Christmas if you asked for the Urban
This was Matt Dillon, Jim Metzler, and Meg Tilly. And it was kind of similar.
I remember seeing that, and I think I'm confusing that with Urban Cowboy. I'm Urban Cowboy, but Drugstore Cowboy.
Oh, right. Well, wait, which one's Midnight Cowboy then?
That's a whole different one. That's the only X-rated film to win an Academy Award.
Right, and it got rated, right? It's R now, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there it is, Drugstore Cowboy. That was 89, so that was quite a ways later. But that was Matt Dillon also.
That was Matt Dillon, all right.
So that's where you're getting confused. But my point is, I think you're right. I think, you could look at Convoy. You could probably look at the Smokey and the Bandit stuff. Like, all those things, I think, fit into your narrative there.
Roadhouse.
Yeah, Roadhouse. Yes, freaking Roadhouse.
How could you not think of that movie?
Yeah, I did think about Roadhouse a lot.
Well, it's a lot
movie.
Later, too, so it's kind of hard to compare it. But the kind of, let's get back to people in bad cars with broken headlights and plaid shirts or whatever the hell Scott Glenn was wearing in this thing. Good freaking Lord.
How many acres of plaid material had to die for all those shirts in there, man?
It was pretty bad. It was pretty bad. Kenny Rogers had a movie called Six Pack. You guys remember that?
Oh, I remember that. That was like six kids in a
station wagon or something, right?
They're going across the country trying to do stuff. He was great, man. Woo! Yeah.
Clint Eastwood had a movie called Honky Tonk Man.
Yeah, and I think his monkey movies count, too. His
monkey movies.
Every Which Way But Loose movies.
We haven't watched those in forever.
Yeah, it's been a while. But don't you feel like those are all part of the weird subgenre that became this sort of thing?
Yes, and the prototypical for me is Rhinestone. Sylvester Stallone, Dolly Parton.
Oh, I never saw Rhinestone.
Oh, it's horrible.
Is it bad?
Stallone has to sing. Like,
I think we can
music.
take a pass on that movie. We don't need to see that movie.
We've already seen that movie.
Good, because I'm using my veto vote for next week's. We'll get to that later in the show today. But anyway, directed by James Bridges. He is actually kind of famous for a bunch of films, movies that would surprise you, I think, maybe. I'll tell you what they are here. He is known for a lot of writing and directing. His directing credits include The Baby Maker. Don't know what that is. But then The Paper Chase.
You don't know what The Baby Maker is? Maybe we need to back up.
Yeah, we need to have a little lesson. The Paper Chase was a big deal. China Syndrome, big deal.
Oh, yeah.
Bright Lights, Big City, big deal. Like, guy made big movies and then died at 57.
I didn't know he died.
Of a heart attack or something. So, yeah.
Right. All the bacon.
Anyway, so he's your director, man. You got your John Travolta, your Deborah Winger, your Scott Glenn, and then a bunch of character actors I love and adore. For example, you got your Barry Corbin in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, his old Uncle Bob.
This is his first film, so that's cool because he would go on to do War Games and a million other great things. And
oh yeah,
I love how he
was spark plug.
Yeah,
he was. I was a little disturbed by Uncle Bob's oral fixation with his pipe, though. He was really.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, no, well, and that and. How much chaw can you jam into your lower lip there, Uncle Bob?
Yeah, it was really, really going to town.
The chaw used in this film is not a commercial for chaw.
If it had been made 7 years later, yeah. I would have said that was product placement.
Sure. Mm. Yeah, we weren't quite there yet. Sure. But he's great, and I just saw him in The Homesman, the movie directed and made by Tommy Lee Jones. He's also in it. It's a Western that's very weird, I thought. I liked it, though. He's in that just briefly. And if you are still not sure who I'm talking about, if you ever watched Northern Exposure, he's Maurice, who kind of runs the town. He's this ex-military guy that just loves everything about where they live. And then later, I think has one of the coolest roles ever in No Country for Old Men, where he has got the most badass beard ever. And basically, if you're making a Western or something, just hire him every freaking time.
Yeah, no kidding.
So it's like Sam Elliott.
I was wondering where his IMDb profile photo came from. That has to be from No Country for Old Men.
I think so. I think you're right. Yeah. If not,
I got a terrible confession to make. That's one of my embarrassing movies that I have not seen.
Oh, you should see it. It's
everybody's seen it, and I have not.
What I love about that movie, I love many things about it, but I think chief among them is that the entire thing takes place without a single music track in the movie. There's no music at all.
So it's like the polar opposite of this one.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, good way to put that, because it's devoid of it. And if you kind of don't notice, because it's made up for with all kinds of weird tension, but it's just when you're told, oh, by the way, No Country for Old Men had no music, no music for old men.
No country music for old men.
it totally doesn't have it. Anyway, he's great. And I just love that guy. But then the other guy is James Gammon. Now, he died.
Oh really?
Yeah, he died in 2010.
Yeah, look at that.
Age of 70 or something.
Right out here near me.
Yeah, yeah. He's really cool. And if you see his photo, you go, oh yeah, we know that guy, and you've seen him in a million things. But what I love the most is in 3 years from now, or 3-4 years from now, he and Scott Glenn would both appear in a movie together again, at the bottom of a ravine, while Scott Glenn's tricking this guy into thinking there's a big posse surrounding him. And they better give up the stuff they stole or else the posse is going to come in and shoot him. And it turns out it's just him and Danny Glover up on a rock.
Mm-hmm.
And he says the word, you know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking there's just a couple of guys up there and one of them's you. It's one of my favorite things ever in a Western. So see Silverado, you bunch of lazy people, because that movie's
good. And if you still don't know who we're talking about, James Gammon was the coach in Major League.
Oh, all right.
He was the manager of the Indians, and he was also Nash Bridges' dad in Nash Bridges.
Really?
Yeah.
I remember that part.
Wow. Yeah,
if you ever watch Nash Bridges, freaking 96 episodes of that show, he played the older dad of Don Johnson.
That's all they got out of that was 96 episodes?
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought there were more than that.
Seems like it went on forever, didn't it?
It did. I liked it. It was bad, but I liked it. I mean, whatever. It was our Don Johnson and Cheech Marin together. Come on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Come on. That's all right. Anyway. What else? I wrote down here, not sure how much spread eagle I can take from Harry John.
Oh, my gosh. I thought the same thing. I was, like, so uncomfortable. Now, don't get me wrong. Some of the shots in this movie were beautiful.
Sure.
That wasn't one of them.
Nope.
It was...
Nope.
I felt very uncomfortable.
Yeah. I recorded some audio from that exchange.
Well, you got to cool off the junk after you've been riding the...
right? So.
My balls hurt, he kept saying.
It's really a different time now. Mm-hmm. There, like, as you watch this movie in 2015, you have to recognize, wow, we put so much more just open sexual behavior in movies before a certain time.
Yeah.
You know, like if this movie was made nowadays... most of the sex would be gone, and it would be implied.
This would also be totally rated PG-13. There's no way this would be R today. They didn't even drop an F. Say what?
I think during the '80s, the big thing on changing, getting all the sex out of movies and TV shows was venereal disease, the spread of disease. The Reagan administration and Tipper Gore were really, really focused on the kids, you know, the kids.
I think what it did is it just removed the middle ground, because there's today, the way you get movies now, it's either completely devoid of sex and it's only implied if at all, or Lord, that gave Brian a buzz on, or on the other side, it's super extreme so you can be extreme. So it's one of those two things. The middle ground got removed by this. You know,
right.
By that era. And I don't know if that ever comes back. I don't know. Because you also have to consider that a few years after this, that new rating popped up. So now we had a new classification. So people were making movies for a different range, I guess.
And you didn't want to get stuck in that NC-17. Nobody knew what to do. It's like, what do you do with this? I don't know how to go see that.
You got to work the poll to get that rating.
Right.
Yeah. And movie theaters just wouldn't show NC-17. They didn't want to start a big kerfuffle in their hometown where people were writing in the local newspaper, don't go to that movie theater that shows naughty movies.
Yeah. Now that I think about it, I've only seen one NC-17 movie ever, and not because I avoided them. I just don't think the opportunity was ever there, or that it looked any good or something like that. But I saw Showgirls. That's it. What else is there?
Right.
Can you guys think of one?
Scarred for life.
Can you think of one you've seen?
So Boys Don't Cry is famously NC-17 for no reason.
Boys don't cry? Of the subject, right? I mean,
well, no, there's nudity in Boys Don't Cry.
Sure, but let's face it.
I guess NC-17, not NC-17 level nudity. That's right.
Right. Yeah. Let's face it. It was given NC-17.
Wait, Hilary Swank movie?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, I never saw that. Okay.
Hey, speaking of Hilary,
good movie.
Speaking of Hilary Swank, didn't you guys really want to see a $1 million baby kind of ending in this thing?
You kept referring to that in the email, and I kept thinking, so you ruined it for me, dude. So I'm watching the movie. And every time they were on the bull, I go, "Uh-oh, this is the thing Brian's talking about. Someone's gonna flip off and break their neck and never be able to ride again. Or he's on the building scaffolding. This is where he breaks his neck, and everyone gathers around him. And now we got Boy in the Bubble for the rest of the movie. And you totally did this to me. So the entire movie, I'm on pins and needles waiting for someone to break their neck. It never happened.
I was sad that it never happened.
The movie does love to put people in precarious spots where you just feel it coming.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it wasn't just riding a bull. It was anything that had to do with anything physical.
Right.
And it's so weird how much fighting there is in this movie. There's so much conflict, especially between John Travolta and Deborah Winger, to a degree that is unrealistic. Not that the movie is realistic, but it's unrealistic how much they fight. And never once does somebody pull out a gun and start shooting.
Yeah, not one time.
Right.
Oh, that's right.
And it's weird because in this movie, I kept feeling like there was a lot of time passage. Like I would think that, okay, now he's learned how to ride the bull. And but when they explained it, she's all like, she's talking to Wes. She's like, how long have you been married? And she's like, a week. And I'm holy shit.
They were married and divorced in like 8.5 days.
Right. Yeah. the most unrealistic thing I think I've ever seen in a movie is that he chases her out of a bar. She doesn't want to have anything to do with him. They just met. Okay. Right. They just met. This is like the second night after they sleep together for the first time. And he almost runs her over with a truck. He jumps out. He starts beating the crap out of her. They end up in a big pool of mud. Someone else almost runs over them. And the whole scene ends with him asking her if she wants to get married. No.
Yeah.
That is no. How could he do that? How could she say yes? That it just mind-boggling.
But I know a guy who can make these custom license plates.
Oh yes, the Sissy Bud plates. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, we got to talk about the ending because the ending really pissed me off. Yeah.
Really, that pissed you off? I mean, it made me okay. Which ending are you talking about?
I thought
about?
You would be pissed, Brian Dunaway, because you hate the way Star Trek sews everything up in about 30 seconds.
Yes,
that's what this movie did. It got to the end and went, oh, I'm going to get in another fist fight with Jimmy over here. All the money poops out of his shirt. Out to the car.
Yeah, it was really like them saying, you know, if we just aligned the dilithium crystals for Gillies,
we're
fixed.
No, that's exactly right. I don't know. That annoyed the hell out of me, to be honest.
The fact that he still had her license plate in the glove compartment. And they just whipped it out, and that's how they ended the movie. Just throwing that back over there. It's as easy as that.
Yep. And then they did it. They closed it with a camera shot of them kissing silhouette style through the back window of his truck. And the truck window is so dirty that it had the effect of a glamour shot.
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you something about where I live. And I feel like it's probably true in a lot of rural places, especially like Texas. I live in South Carolina. And one of the things that people who are not from here see are people, guys, ride around these giant trucks, and the women will be snug up against the man. So they'll be like right in the middle
three
of the
quarters
truck.
Of the way off that bench seat. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Because you normally, if you sit in a car, because cars have bucket seats usually, and everybody's on their little side and everything's good.
On the gear shift, basically.
Right.
Right. But no, not in a bench seat, big ass truck like that, because they slide right over and he throws his arm over her and it's just all lovely. And the fact that he let her in on his side of the truck, I mean, that whole thing was just making me.
Well, that's enough to want to get remarried, Brian.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now they go back to their shitty trailer and clean that joint up, man.
You just got to think. I've never seen
somebody so excited to live in a trailer.
I realize we're jumping around, but my gosh, you got to recognize at least one of them in that kiss tasted the other one's paramour on her lips, his lips.
Oh,
yeah, think about it. They really move in and out of that relationship fast.
Yeah. And plus, I don't know, dude. I found her. Okay. Let's get to the sexism real quick.
All right.
Oh, gosh.
This movie is, I'm not saying the movie's being sexist so much as they're portraying sexism in a microcosmic culture, okay? And they're showing, this is basically men who are yelling, make me a sandwich or I'll backhand you kind of culture. At least that's what they're showing. Now, whether this ever existed or still exists or any of that, we could argue that all day, but that's what they're trying to show. And I thought she was really good in this movie all the way through it. But there were a couple of moments where something didn't feel right to me. Like, she shows all this independence and all this strength and all this stuff. And I see this through the eyes of a father of two daughters and the eyes of a 2015-year-old, a person living in 2015 who has seen a lot of change when it comes to how women are treated in film and in other media, right? So seeing it through those eyes, I thought it was completely out of character that she was so spunky and independent one time. And then the other time, she's going to let these guys just smack her and then go do what they say.
Mm-hmm.
Especially freaking Scott Glenn, you bastard, man.
You're supposed to hate that character. And of course you do. But they make the character worse and worse as the film goes on. Mm-hmm. With each scene, he gets a little bit more evil. And they have to. Because John Travolta is such a huge jerk if Scott Glenn doesn't constantly dive to a lower depth, you're going to hate everybody.
Yeah. That's right.
I was starting to get protective of her, like in my own weird, I'm not in this movie kind of way. I kept thinking, damn it, if you touch her again, dude, I swear. Because there's something
about cut your losses and move out of Texas.
Well, there's just something so sweet about her portrayal. Something, I don't know. I guess
she's innocent. She's super young.
And sweet and kind. And I don't know. There was something there. And these guys were written, especially Scott Glenn, but he was just written to be this cheating, lying, swaggering.
He's written to be a country song.
I guess so.
Everybody in the movie is a country song.
Yeah.
You can do that.
Written by Mickey Gilley.
Patrick Swayze taught John Travolta how to do the two-step for the movie. That's kind of cool.
Oh, yes, our other dancer from the 80s.
Well, his mom, so Patrick Swayze's mom is listed in the credits as the choreographer for the entire film, but I guess Swayze Jr. there would get out there and help. So that's kind of cool. According to Deborah Winger's book, she made a book. She only got the part after Sissy Spacek, who was originally cast, had a falling out with Travolta. So I wonder what that fight was like.
I don't know. Was that a nod, though? Because the character's name was Sissy. Was that a nod, or was
it
that a...
Been, yeah, it might have been intentionally written with her in mind.
Could have been a big bird on the middle finger.
That's what I was thinking, a big old bird on the middle finger. Hey, you don't want to be in our movie? Fine, we'll steal your
let's
name.
Let's go glass half full and say it was mean-spirited. Let's just say it. John Travolta had a mechanical bull installed in his home 2 months before production. He wanted to become good, and he became so good, it says here, that he was allowed to dismiss the stunt double and do all the takes himself, so... Take that's that awesome. For what it may be, which
and,
could be false.
And let's agree, there were definitely action shots where the film was sped up.
Oh, yeah. You mean while they were on the bull and stuff?
Yeah. There were definitely.
Yeah, there's
definitely.
No question about that.
But it wasn't horribly bad. I've seen much worse.
Yeah. Oh, sure. I agree.
Well, give me an example. Who are you thinking of?
Oh, anytime they were riding the bull, I mean, it was definitely sped up in the middle.
Oh, you mean you've seen... No, I meant what movies have you seen that are worse at that?
My gosh, pick a movie from this time. I mean, pick a car chase. Yeah, I mean, you used to get to go like 15 miles an hour, but they would speed up the film so like everybody was going 110.
Yeah, they're all kind of bad, aren't they?
Look bad.
It was a bad era, dude. Script was originally written with Dennis Quaid in mind for the central role of Bud. Yeah, yeah. In the end, it went to Travolta. I sort of can see it.
What was he doing right around this time? Like, because this was before...
You mean Dennis Quaid?
Yeah. Dennis Quaid, yeah, because I always think of him more of like a mid-80s.
Let's find out.
Right. He would have been super young
so
here, right?
So 78 through 79, which is roughly when he would have
filmed
Breaking
Away. Holy cow. Okay, so super young Dennis Quaid.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Caveman. I forget about that movie.
And he was Roy in Amateur Night at the Dixie Bar and Grill, which was a made-for-TV film. And then in Gorp, he was Matt Grossman.
That was my favorite movie about trail mix ever.
Yeah.
You know, they really went further with Trail Mix than I thought they could. It's really it's an impressive.
Yeah, it wasn't until 1983, The Right Stuff. That's forgetting about Breaking Away, which he's like a secondary character in there. But that's the first time I remember
Dennis Quaid would have been better at this. This movie. I thought was going to feature John Travolta dancing a lot, therefore he makes sense. But no, it only really features him dancing twice. Both of them are relatively short scenes.
Yeah.
And there's just something weird about John Travolta mixing with all these people. Like everyone else in the movie is not an Italian American, and there he is with his cowboy hat on. It just felt a little off.
I think if he kept the beard, it would have held up better to do that.
Yeah, I didn't understand that. Yeah. Why did that character get beard shaving forced on him?
Well, didn't the guy? So the guy said you have to wear a mask, and there's a safety thing or
got
something.
Got it. Got it. Well, but actually, it could have been anything else.
Right.
There's trivia about that in the thing saying that that he shaved it after appearing at a couple diners during the making of the film, and he wasn't getting any autograph seekers. So let's see. Here we go. Early scenes of the movie, John Travolta sports a beard. According to the director, Travolta wanted to keep the beard throughout the film, but after a lunch date with the actor in a very popular restaurant failed to attract even one autograph seeker, then Travolta was convinced to shave it off.
Then boo freaking who, chin hole man. That sucks.
Wait, was his calling mark back then? That was very popular having a chimple.
Chimple. Yeah. I love it.
He always kept 15 cents in there in case he needed change. What?
You brought up the the dancing, or their lack of dancing. Weren't you expecting when they were talking, when Gilly, it was probably Gilly, was talking about how this big championship was going to involve three things: bull riding, dancing, and hitting the punching bag deal.
Kind of a triathlon.
Weren't you expecting that they were going to have to go through all of those, and it was going to be like neck and neck like between him and Scott Glenn?
I really did. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I honestly thought it'd be like a triathlon, and they would be they'd get to the next event, and he'd be barely hanging on, and then totally dominate it, and it would swing the other way. All the while, music's like some rocky. You're the best.
And it was going to end with the dancing competition. They were one point away from each other. And at the very end, Deborah Winger was going to say, "No, I'm going to dance with Bud." And then she'd come back to Bud and dance. Roll credits. I felt like I could have written that. And
yeah,
that
right.
I they think, didn't I exactly
think we're still
do
a
that.
Few yeah. years away from that. Though, sure. Like about maybe 4 years away from that whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not wrong to think it, though. Like, yeah. right. you given who you are and what you've seen, dude, I think you kind of nailed it.
Four years later, that would have been the exact story, though.
It totally would have been, yeah.
Sure. What else?
Was anybody else underwhelmed by bull riding and score giving?
Yeah.
As the big conflict.
It does like, seem like a very arbitrary, we're going to award points to the bull and points to the bull rider.
Yeah.
I award points to the bull. I don't know.
To me, it's like giving somebody, it's like training equipment to me. Like that's what I felt like they were being competitive with. It's like, oh, you, I don't know. What's a good equivalent to like something else? Like a rowing machine. Like right. you're not going to say, you've traversed the Thames in less time than the rest of the British team. No,
but I could imagine a rowing machine being hooked up to a scoreboard that just number gives me the number of times you've rowed or something.
Right, and that would be a terrible thing to even care about. Like like a bike machine at the gym. You don't have like, all right, get old one ball in here. We're gonna go up against the other guy. I can't think of any other bike guys. But you know, like it seems like a piece of training equipment, not
right. That was the idea. What's this?
Well, even Bo, Uncle Bill, there, he says this is what I trained on for the actual damn rodeo.
Right,
right.
But there's a good reason why the actual rodeo isn't the ultimate goal here, and that's because you don't want to put actors on bulls, right?
Yeah,
so,
I guess so
they did
later.
Well, 8 seconds. Sure. Remember 8 seconds. Yeah.
Right. Sure, but I mean, I'm talking about this movie made with these actors. It's understandable.
With this set of actors.
It's understandable why you would say we're going to make it a mechanical bull conflict. The conflict itself just wasn't that
now
good.
That you mention it, or now that this has come up, 8 seconds is a spiritual successor to this. It's basically the same movie, isn't it?
Agreed.
Except,
totally.
Who was the guy, 90210 guy?
Luke Perry.
Luke Perry on a horse, man.
Perry, 8 seconds, yeah.
Stupid.
Hey, did you guys ever see Stir Crazy?
A long time ago, ages ago.
Didn't they escape or try to escape one time from that prison through a rodeo or prison?
Yeah, during the rodeo they were trying to.
Because
yeah.
I kept thinking when I first started watching this movie and it was at a prison rodeo, I was like, man, that's a really bad idea. Did that ever actually exist?
Yes.
It actually was. It really was a prison rodeo. And I guess maybe it still goes on today. How can you do that?
Hold on. Texas.
That's one word answer. Texas.
Texas, yeah.
Texas. And, all right.
So this is, you keep saying Pasadena in passing, but this was supposed to be Houston, right?
Houston.
But it wasn't really in Houston. Or are we talking about Pasadena, Texas?
Pasadena, Texas.
The other chinpal woman in the movie lived in Houston. I think everything else took place in Pasadena.
Okay,
got it. Because when he looked out her windows, I think that was definitely not Pasadena.
By the way, she hasn't done jack for years and years and years. Actress, lady. Mm-hmm. Who played Pam, but she is beautiful. I looked her up from some event. She looks amazing today.
Yeah, except for that chin.
I know you're not a fan. You're not a fan.
Not a fan.
Pasadena has been engulfed by Houston, but back in the day, it was a suburb on the way to the coast on between Houston and the ocean.
Right.
I thought she was fan, but you say she's nobody, but she did Funny Farm, and that was
Oh, she's been in. Yeah, no kidding.
She's been in lots of stuff. It's just been a long time. I don't mean bad stuff. She's in plenty of things, but she just kind of quit, got married, had kids, and stopped.
She actually does look really good still.
Yeah, she's lovely.
All right.
And Brian Ibbett. Brian, let there be no doubt there were shots in California. Pasadena is the most flat thing you'll ever see. There were many times where they're driving along or whatever, like, okay, those are the San Gabriel Mountains in the background. I don't know what in the world they think that's anywhere near the bayou in Texas.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, she did a bunch of, I'm just looking, she was in all kinds of TV shows, you're right, Funny Farm, a bunch of stuff. But she was, she quit in 94. That's a long time. I mean, that's 21 years ago that she quit.
I thought
acting.
For sure some of the kissing scenes with her and Travolta, their chins were actually going to connect like Lego bricks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they were going to need one of those little spanners to pull them apart.
They were going
to
pop into place and then never. It's like two dogs mating. You got to wait for it to. So let me ask you something about her. I really didn't like how that all. I don't know. I really had a hard time with the ending, and she was a part of it. So. She was serviceable. I don't mean that in a misogynistic way.
Sure. Okay,
I mean,
right.
As a character, you can use her to say, yes, she is a good thing for him to find following this broken 8-day marriage. Mm-hmm. And that you could see that thing working out. Why didn't it work out? two reasons. One, she felt like he was still pining for what's her name, and B, now she's going to confess that she took the card and never let him read it, and the house was cleaned by the other girl, and she never said anything.
But
she sucked. Yeah. I didn't like
no,
her.
No, but how you get to the conclusion after all of that, where she doesn't really want him now. Now that she's confessed all this stuff that's been going on between them, now that you know that I wanted you so much, I was willing to lie to you, I don't really want you anymore.
Yeah. And
she asked him point blank, are you doing this to make your wife jealous? Right at the beginning. Yes. So I feel like everything that happened after that point was under those pretenses, and she shouldn't have expected that anything was going to last.
Yeah, I guess so. Right.
Boom, well, mic drop.
They'd only been together for like a week. I mean, according to the movie logic of this.
It's probably hours, that whole way.
Right? Yeah. It's probably like two nights over at his house. You know what I'm saying? It was.
And his bruises, I mean, the way they would heal over about 2 days at a time, like serious face lacerations 2 days later, they're gone. Like they had no concept of time.
Oh, you know, cut off your cast. Yeah. Who cares?
No problem.
You're done. You're good.
You only broke it on Tuesday. It's Thursday. Cut it off already.
Cut off your own cast.
I didn't even think about the cast. He barely had the cast on. Yeah, if that was a real break, good. You're talking 4 weeks minimum, six at the
three
best.
Words. Mutant healing power.
That's right. He's a Wolverine cowboy.
Logan Davis.
Logan.
What else? There's other things that happened. Travolta, every scene he's in, and I've said this about other movies, but I'm convinced, and I don't say this just in light of recent events.
Okay.
He does not look like he enjoys kissing anyone ever.
No. Oh, yeah.
It looks like work to him when he's kissing the ladies. And I'm not saying he'd rather be kissing the dudes. He may. I don't know. I mean, he's still pretending like all those photos don't mean anything, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, he goes both ways, and it's fine.
It's fine with me.
This is back when.
Wait! He goes both ways. What are you accusationing here?
No,
I'm not making an accusation. It is well known. John Travolta goes both ways. He wasn't well known back then, and it would have been held against him. But now he just needs to come out of the closet.
Well, when he's ever on screen with a lady, it just looks like pain when he's kissing him.
It does.
And the girls look fine. Does. They're like, all right, yeah, whatever. Good looking dude. Yeah, here we go. Let's do this. Sacrifice yourself for your art. But he's over there just going, ugh. Bleh, bleh. She smells pretty and tastes good.
There was only one kiss that I really kind of bought. And it was almost like it was when they were dancing on the floor. And it was like later in the night of the dance before they get married or fight or whatever they did that night. All kinds of stuff happened.
Yeah.
But he really lays one on her. I mean, it's just like they just like are going at it.
That seemed real to you? Good to you? Solid?
It seemed believable.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not buying it whenever he kisses anybody. I've yet to see him kiss somebody in a movie where I went, yep, he's into it. He's totally into it.
How about when he kissed himself in Face Off? Was it?
Ah!
There you go. Yeah,
he fathered three children with Kelly Preston. They've been married for 24 years.
Yeah.
The oldest one died.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Don't you remember?
Was it a drug thing?
Yeah, I remember. No, he died from a...
Yeah, he had some really odd seizure disease.
Right. I forgot about that.
And he died on vacation.
And now I feel bad about talking
about
it.
Now I shouldn't have brought it up. I'm still saying, if he swings both ways, it's fine. Obviously, they all have an agreement.
But he just doesn't look... In this movie, he really doesn't look like he wants to kiss her.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at.
Whichever one she is.
And I would have totally kissed the Deborah Winger. She was a cute. She's a cutie.
I'm so glad you told us, Scott. I was wondering.
She's a real cutie.
She's never been cast as Zooey Deschanel's mom in a movie, but she should have been.
Oh my gosh, right? Dude. You kind of nailed that. Yeah, that's exactly something she should have done. I guess she couldn't have, though. Where was Deschanel back then? She would have been not born yet? No.
Like, yeah, probably four
or 5 years old. Right. Yeah.
Right.
What else? Esports, we already talked about that.
Have y'all ever seen so much wood paneling in one trailer?
Oh God. It was laminate. It was wallpaper made to look like wood paneling.
Even worse. It's all that's holding that place together, that stuff. And it had those that sweet I don't even know avocado green cooking range and
mm-hmm.
Those are the days. I mean, whatever. I guess it was true to the
at the time, the people life. Probably would have liked to have lived in one of those.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
With a big bow on it? Hey, yeah, why not? Hey, you know what? Scott Glenn, when he was eating that tequila worm, that was kind of
sick.
Oh
my gosh.
That was the worst thing ever.
My wife.
The worst thing in the movie.
My wife gagged.
It was so long and arduous. Come on, finish the damn thing.
So he like put it in his mouth, brings it back out, puts it in his mouth. I'm like, just eat it already.
The trivia says
Scott Glenn lava lamp exactly. For about the first 20 seconds.
Exactly. The trivia says that they did that as a joke for the dailies. So they were sending dailies to producers, and they did that as a take, as a joke, thinking they'd laugh because, oh, he ate the worm or whatever, and they ended up using it. So you could see him shaking too, like he was like not really into it and having a hard time getting it down. But yeah, that was sick. That's when my wife checked out. She's like, I can't watch this movie. I'm like, all right, no problem.
Stupid, I'm out of here.
She was standing over here watching me. All right, I know what I was going to say. I wrote a line here, and I don't know what I meant. Now I think I know what I meant. I think I put two words together that weren't meant to, and now it's ironic. It says, the word says, there's way too much mechanical bullshit. And I think I meant mechanical bull space shit, meaning too many mechanical bulls. And that's an important distinction to make about this movie versus others of this ilk. It isn't just like, oh, there's that, like Friday Night Lights is about football, but not really. It's about relationships and family and stuff like that. Football is a thing, but it's not the thing. In this movie, mechanical bulls, every 5 minutes for long periods of time, people riding them, falling off of them, grinding on them, apparently, in one scene. That's what this movie is. So if you think you're going to watch this and not see a bunch of mechanical bulls, I have bad, bad news for you.
Well, and that was, and I'm going to argue that.
All right.
I think this movie was a thinly veiled excuse to showcase a bunch of country western singers and their songs, and that they perform at places like Gilly's. And the movie comes kind of second to that, the plot and the characterizations and everything. Yeah. And it overcomes it because that's what we're used to seeing. So, you know, in the final edit, it can't just be Bonnie Raitt and Charlie Daniels. It has to have a story and all this other stuff.
Right.
But my gosh, this was a big music video.
Yeah. It was. Literally a country song come to life.
Well, back really quickly, back to the grinding on a mechanical bull. There is a great Amy Schumer bit about a couple women in a country bar, and they say, well, you know, Amy Schumer's friend tells her, well, you know that guys like watching women on mechanical bulls because it's like what it looks like when they're having sex. And so her friend gets up there and is all sultry and riding the bull. And then Amy Schumer gets up and she's like falling face first and getting a bloody nose and riding back up and dizzy. And it's actually one of the better Amy Schumer bits.
All right. Amy Schumer is brilliant at taking what we think is sexual and turning it into what it really is, which is just disgusting.
Remind me, is it her or Chelsea Handler that's always showing her boobs on the internet?
It's Chelsea Handler's always showing her boobs on the internet.
Right. I always get them mixed up.
Amy Schumer has this amazing eye for recognizing how to play something so that people are going to want to share it on the internet.
Yeah.
It's just remarkable.
For sure.
It's genius.
Somebody said she turned down the Jon Stewart position.
Yeah, that's just all over the place.
Then someone else told me that she was in the running but didn't get it.
Was not offered it. Yeah.
I don't think she's even if she, I don't think she would be a good fit for that. I think her talent is elsewhere.
Is skits. Yeah, I think skits and stand up are her thing. I don't think a news program would be the right fit for her. Yeah.
Not it's that she very, couldn't do it, but
is it going to be a news program with someone who doesn't
We don't know a thing about that.
Is it from America?
Yeah, it's from here.
Like I have no idea what it's going
to
be.
I don't know either. I'll withhold judgment. I just know it's going to be a loss to humanity to not have Jon Stewart every night. No matter who it is, and I pity anyone. I don't care who it is, how great they are, how strong they are, how amazing they are. I mean, you could have told me John Oliver, and I'd still feel this loss. It'd be a little easier to take.
But if it was John Oliver, it'd be awesome.
It would be great because at least he's a known quantity, and we also, having seen what he's doing at HBO, we know what he's going to do, right? Like, it would have been right in line with what is already there. So, yes, absolutely. But still, there's still something about him leaving that is just killing me. It's tearing me apart.
Especially this year with Donald Trump running for president.
Oh, my gosh. No kidding. He's only got a month left as a host. He's got to think of all the things he must want to say.
Yeah.
I realize we're going down a rabbit hole here, but I want to say publicly to the world, how did you let Jason Jones and Samantha Bee get away from this property without giving them a chance to sit side by side, they're married, and run this show? I don't understand. It would have been amazing.
Where are they now? What are they doing? They just quit to do other stuff?
I don't know. Yeah.
I like them both.
No, they won't return my calls. I don't know.
Well, they call me. I must have done something to offend them. Anything else other than
yes,
what we've said
Oh, my
here?
Gosh.
All right, what else
so
you got?
I was so disgusted by the floor mattresses that they had around the bowl.
These are the discarded mattresses from the double wide out back.
Yeah.
That Scott right. Glenn fouls up and they bring them in here.
Oh, my gosh. It was so Tammy and Wes were riding this one earlier, so he brought it on in.
That alien. Did you see that alien he had in the closet? I think that was supposed to be a lady, but it was like an alien lady.
That
was Tammy. What was her name? I forget.
Zontar from Nebulon 4, dude. That's what that was.
Well, he was waiting for Rick and Shane to take her out.
Yeesh. I thought that was gnarly. Do you know that Sir Travolta's only Western, if you want to call it that, or cowboy movie? He's never done any other thing, like as a bad guy with a big mustache or anything.
That was my point. Hmm. It's like Sylvester Stallone doing Rhinestone. What the heck? You don't belong. What are you doing there?
Yeah. Did you guys? I know this is another. I don't want to go down another giant hole, but did you see the Apollo Creed or the Creed trailer?
See
this? Okay. I'm actually kind of excited about it now. On paper, I would have gone, don't care. But it's Apollo Creed's son, trying to make it in boxing, and it's the kid from Friday Night Lights, also the
is
new Human Torch. Can't think of his name.
Michael B. Jordan.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And he eventually in this trailer ends up with Sly Stallone as Rocky Balboa helping train him, get him ready for the thing. Now that on paper sounds kind of dumb and contrived, but I think the trailer looked really, really good. And I'm now officially excited about that movie. And I was not after hearing about it. So yeah, check that out. Watch that trailer at some point.
Interesting. Yeah. Haven't heard about that.
Yeah. It looks good. And he's cool. That kid's buffed out, man.
Woo. Yeah, he is.
He'll tear you a new hole.
Good actor, too.
Travolta he so wants to write lots of movies until he dies.
Of course he does.
He can't help himself.
I'm down with that.
But he'll get all the names backwards. It'll all be Adele Dazeem.
I didn't mean to say Travolta. Stallone wants to write movies. Sorry. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Did he write that, or is he...
yes.
He's not directing, I know. He's just in it.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
And I mean, if you look at the last 10 years, my gosh, Stallone's been writing movies.
Well, the best one he did was... Rocky Balboa.
Rocky 6,
In recent memory. And if he applies that kind of writing to this, then even the better, I think. Maybe this is where he just should stay. Quit trying to make Untouchables or whatever the hell it is. Incredibles. What is it?
Expendables.
The Expendables.
Expendables. But he's made 3. He wanted to make 3, right? And that's it.
Yes.
Is he done? That's done now?
Yes. It was a trilogy of films. It's done.
Oh. Does it follow a trilogy arc of story?
Hell no.
Okay.
Absolutely not.
All right.
He just had to get everybody in there.
Are we required?
The cast said, no, we're not going to do another one of these. It's a trilogy. Okay, fine.
Are we required by Film Sack bylaws to see the third since we've done the first and second?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
That's in the bylaws. It's in the bylaws.
All right,
I recently looked it up.
Well, the bylaws also. Go ahead.
I wish you guys had went. Did anybody go see the new Terminator?
No.
Nope.
I did.
No. I saw Inside Out, but not the new Terminator.
How's the new Terminator?
I thought it was enjoyable.
You hesitated there in a very telling way.
Well, is this like when you asked me a few weeks back what did I think about Jurassic World? I'm like, hey, I liked it. It was okay. It was good fun. Same thing with the Terminator. I liked it. I had fun. But the one thing that kind of distinguishes the two, even though I'm not saying that Terminator is better than Jurassic World, because I don't necessarily believe that, I am saying that the following day, I actually wanted to go back and watch the Terminator series, whereas when I watched Jurassic World, I was like, yeah, okay, I just saw exactly what happened in the other, so I could really care less about going back to see the other Jurassic stuff.
There is definitely, you could argue that movie's just Jurassic Park.
So you wanted to see the other Terminator movies for completion or because, remind me what this movie could have been.
Remind me, but completion mostly because I'm like, oh yeah, because that timeline was here and that timeline was there and the ideas and I thought it was interesting. Bad thing is I couldn't get anybody to go with me to see it. And when I got there, this was opening night. Well, it was a Friday night, so it wasn't exactly like a Thursday night opening, but there was really hardly like maybe even an eighth of the theater was filled. And there were so many single people by themselves. Like I usually you see, you know, 2 or 3 people, and I went to see it by myself. And there were a lot of single individual people there, like all looking the same way. Like I just wanted them to come see the movie with me.
Aww.
And nobody would come see it with me.
Aww.
And I'm wondering if there's not some if they didn't advertise this movie all wrong, because I think they were advertising it to like, you know, the nostalgia of those people who saw it back in '84. And I don't think many people caught that at all. Maybe we, do you hate Schwarzenegger now? Is that is
no?
Why didn't you? Why didn't you guys go see it?
I don't know.
Just lack no of interest.
The reviews.
Yeah, I can't be bothered.
The reviews are so bad that I usually anything under 50% just makes me go, you know what? DVD, that'll work.
But that would, I would say that would be true if it was like, oh, Guardians of the Galaxy had a bad review. Never really saw Guardians of the Galaxy, so I have no idea what it's going to be about. But like if the Terminator comes out and it's like bad reviews, I'm like, yeah, but I'm still going to go see it because I have a personal investment into it.
Yeah, and I do, so but mine only extends as far as like the dollar it rents that it costs me to rent it from a Redbox.
Here's the sad thing is that Scott and I actually have Terminator Genesis in the movie draft, in the 2015
interesting
movie draft, and we couldn't be bothered to contribute to our own score.
I think that says a little something. I think right there. By the way, that movie's enjoying a 27% on Rotten Tomatoes. Faith-based film, Faith of Our Fathers, doing a robust 13%. So there's that. Good job. One of the Baldwins is in that. Stephen Baldwin, everybody. Congratulations. You're in the worst reviewed movie of the month.
Good job.
Can I? Oh, Scott, by the way, speaking of Stallone written films, there's a movie on Netflix streaming called Homefront.
All right.
It stars Jason Statham, James Franco, Winona Ryder.
Winona Ryder.
Yeah. written by Sylvester Stallone.
Homefront.
Homefront.
Yeah, I think I've seen that.
Homefront, 2013, Jason Statham, Franco, Winona Ryder. Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 42% at the time.
Better than all the Expendables.
Interesting. That's a good point. Yeah, you're right. Look at that. Written by, wow, really?
Yeah, he just wants to write movies.
Weird.
He just wants to write movies.
Well, good for
him. Jason Statham's done with the Transporter movies because that new one doesn't have it in. No,
that is too bad. I don't understand why we can't have more Transporter movies with Jason Statham.
I agree, but don't worry. Almost all his movies are like Transporter movies, so that's fine. He's
true
in lots
story.
Of Transporter movies, it turns out. He's supposed to be amazing in that spy movie. I haven't seen it, but heard nothing but praise for Jason Statham as the bad agent or whatever in that new Melissa McCarthy business.
Right.
Let's do clips.
I got one trope.
Give it.
That I just want to talk about. It's called the berserk button. When you hit the berserk button, somebody who hasn't been able to do something so far can suddenly do it because they saw they're enraged, basically.
Oh,
In this movie, John Travolta's character spends the whole movie basically being one-upped by Scott Glenn's character. And then at the very end, when he sees the bruises on Deborah Winger's face, it hits the berserk button, he goes nuts, and suddenly now he can just kick Scott Glenn to the floor.
Yep.
It's not even, you don't even question it. You know he's going to go win.
He's strong to the finish because he eats his spinach.
Because the button got pressed.
It's right, basically right. The Popeye method is what it is.
It is.
So he finally popped his top and went and hit him so hard all the money came out. That was my favorite part.
It didn't just come out. It exploded.
Yeah, it
out.
Did. It was like he had a squib pack in his shirt. That was amazing.
Well, all right.
You got to learn how to carry money out of a robbery.
I guess so. What you can say?
If we're doling out tropes, let me throw one out too.
All right.
Uncle Bob imparts his wisdom and then dies, further increasing the importance of the advice.
Yep. Exactly.
Yes.
The Obi-Wan Kenobi that business.
Well, yep.
But I mean, it was a deathbed wisdom, right? Mm-hmm. It was a double trope, right?
He didn't know he was on his deathbed until he went up there.
That's true.
Yeah.
Until he got all electrocuted.
We're going to Gilly's after this, right? After this, we're going to Gilly's?
Yeah, let's go to Gilly's.
I've never
again.
Been to Gilly's before, except for those five times we went during this movie.
Right. And didn't your ex-wife live right behind there in a trailer with Wes? Let's go on out to Gilly's.
Yeah. I wonder if somebody will be singing at Gilly's tonight. And that was it. Laid down. Out. Is this him here?
Kiss on your hush puppies.
Nope, that's not him.
So not him.
I was trying to find
Till then, you'd get better mileage filling up your Cadillac with mule piss.
I was trying to find all the piss references to the spark plug, and I can't find it.
Oh.
Remember
by
that?
The way,
try pee. Pee on a spark plug.
Pee on
by
a spark
the way, plug. Brian Ibbett just brought up the Obi-Wan.
Mm-hmm.
The mentor who dies is the Obi-Wan.
Yeah,
it's
the Obi-Wan. Yeah.
Like, this is it. We've been talking about that trope forever. It hasn't come up lately.
Mm-hmm.
This is it right here.
I don't freaking have it. I'm so sad. All right,
teaches
but I do
him how to ride a bull, and then teaches him to swallow your pride. I'm glad my throat's big enough now because I can swallow the pride.
Swallow your pride.
Teach him how to lie to his mom and take him out to meet two prostitutes from the Gillies.
That's right. That old thing.
All right, clip time. We got some clips. Let's begin with this one where he doesn't want to eat breakfast. It's very early in the film.
I don't want no breakfast, Mama. I got to get going.
Oh, all right.
Okay.
Okay.
Y'all sure you don't want no breakfast, bud? Here he is getting a job interview.
You know, flunky, gopher. You know what a gopher is, boy?
Well, I think it means, you know, gopher things. Or it could mean you're an animal.
That's a little Vinnie Barbarino joke right there.
Yeah, totally. Yep. Expect him to go,
could mean I'm an animal, Mr. Carter. Don't touch my hair.
All right, some country music. Here's some good. Here's a good example. All right, so here's some good stuff.
Well, I spent a lifetime thinking for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, dude. Thank
you. Looking for nub.
Yeah. Looking for nub.
This movie, I can't. It feels like two different things. It feels like a movie about a horrible asshole mistreating people. Mm-hmm. And that would be Mickey Gilley, by the way.
Yeah.
And it feels like a movie about really good music.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. In a weird way, you're right. How about Broke My Hand?
I broke my hand listening to a beer joint fat in Oklahoma City. You really know when something's broke. I mean, you do. You can't move nothing. Your fingers get all swelled up and everything. Shit.
It just dawned on me listening to the way he's talking. Is he supposed to be a little bit mentally disabled?
Maybe. Especially in the beginning. And by the character, I mean yeah. One day before his wedding. He seemed to be a little off, and then went from that to super popular 3 days later, and then ended this movie in 4 days. So there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
Where's my eggs? I don't remember this.
Where's my eggs?
Hold your horses, it's coming.
Oh, I just like to illustrate the stereotypic tropey cafe in these towns.
The diner.
Yeah, exactly. The diners are the best. Where you yell at the ladies and they yell back. That's great.
Christopher Reeve is about to walk in there and spin some guy's seat so fast that he couldn't.
Yep. Then slide him down the counter.
Machine.
Yep. Exactly. Yep. Oh my gosh, I love that scene. All right, here's. Oh. What?
You look so great up on that boy.
Oh, I want. Okay. This is. Sorry, let me play it again. This is Deborah Winger. I want you guys to see if you can decipher what she's saying. Okay. So she's brushing her teeth, and that always makes it hard to understand. So here you go. Yeah.
You look so great up on that bull.
Was that you look so great up on that bull?
You look so great up on that bull.
I can't eat no more of this tuna salad with onions in it.
Thanks. Now I have to clean the mirror too. Thanks.
Thanks. Good job.
Cracks me up. All right. Here's another. So here's where he's got his legs spread apart for like 20 minutes.
Well, I might have been the best one all night long, but I'll tell you something. My balls are killing me.
Yeah, he sounds like Sling Blade a little bit.
Yeah, it's just a thing going.
Randy, now I'm wondering.
What if that this entire movie is about someone who's a little slow and desperately needs everybody to help and work with them and doesn't?
And then in the last minute, I punched a guy and the money went everywhere and I went away with my girlfriend.
Okay, I wasn't saying make fun of that.
I'm saying maybe it was off from his point of view, and the reason it's sewed up so simply in the end is because it's a simple little tale. That's all.
Okay.
All right, here's your sorry, this is after the fight.
But if they smell beer on your breath, it works.
Just get me a beer!
Oh my gosh, dude, chill.
What
out.
The heck?
Just get me a beer!
Then, right?
And then she says, okay, sir, or something
like
that.
Yes, sir, I think she
said.
Yes,
sir.
Just get me a beer!
Listen to that. His accent went away.
Why was he so angry? Was that ever explained?
He's got problems, man. I think these are built-in cultural problems.
Natural hothead.
Yeah, natural hothead. There you go. Just get him a beer.
Just get me a beer!
All right, we got early 80s suspense music while he's on the scaffolding. Here you go. Seriously, is Kit going to come around the side and Michael called him over? What are we doing? This is terrible.
After school special.
That was. I'll bet you they bought that music from a soap opera.
It felt like it was completely out of place, so you're probably not wrong. Something about his back.
But what happened?
I fell off the scaffold.
You're kidding.
No. 200 feet in there. Damn near broke my back.
No.
I think Randy's right. This is like radio or freaking Sam. One of those movies.
By the way, I'll save it for when you go. Right, keep going. Right.
I like this one. Another little fight.
God damn it. McDonald's again.
Shit.
Too early for a fish sandwich.
Who doesn't want McDonald's again? Come on.
It was great.
Back in the 80s, man. McDonald's.
In 1980, I wanted McDonald's all every meal.
Now, yeah. as we know, before Brian Ibbett in high school would go on prom nights, before he'd go out on the date, his dad would sit down and give him a little advice, you know, a little sonly, fatherly advice. And we captured some from 1985, and this is what his dad said to him. So here you go.
And now remember, keep your head in the well. Don't think about nothing but the ride.
There you go. That's it.
Nice. Good, good.
Did you keep that to heart? Did you?
I did. I totally did. And then I protected my family jewels. Did you capture that one?
I forgot to.
Oh.
I know. You even texted me.
I texted you because there's this weird noise that somebody makes right after they say, protect the family jewels.
It was like a little ring noise or something?
Mm. No, it was like somebody's laugh, but it sounds like,
like a car driving by.
Like they're like the Death Star is about to fire.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what you just sounded like.
It's somebody's laugh and they're
Here's another it's another Scott Glenn moment.
Oh shit, bud! She rides better than you do.
Sorry, take it back. That's the he was a doppelganger for Pineapple Express. Can't think of his name all of a sudden. Not
James Franco.
Oh, Seth Rogen?
No, the other one.
James Franco.
James Franco. That guy looked like James Franco. Or is like his uncle or his dad or something. Weird.
Okay. He was one with the long hair on the side, right?
Yep, big drapes in the front.
Yes. Right.
Stupid. this is a good line.
I can tell you how to score points. I can't show you because I'm too fat, but I can tell you.
That's so good.
He is always good. Everything he does in that accent in every movie.
Yeah. Can you name a bad Barry Corbin moment? I can't think of one. My desire to constantly see and re-see Northern Exposure is primarily pivots on him being there. That's how much I like that guy. Mm. I freaking love him. Here's this.
Love, look what you've done to me.
Yes, that old country classic.
Yeah. Yeah.
By Boz Scaggs.
You know, those hoedowns that featured that song, why they were off the hook.
Written, by the way, by David Foster, who I guess wrote everything in that time frame.
Hmm. He was the man. He was a go-to.
Yeah.
Here's one of my favorite phrases in all of Southern speak. Brian Dunaway, this is for you, buddy. You ready?
Do it.
Here we go.
Sometimes even a cowboy's got to swallow his pride and hold on to somebody he loves.
You got to swallow your pride.
Mm. On Tuesday.
Swaller.
Sounded just like my dad. He said swaller and... referred
good.
To going over there and opening up that window.
That window.
Oh, no. The window is all right, but you need to go grab a hold of the doorknob.
Yeah.
And you got to open that up first.
Randy, you need to swallow your pride and open that window.
Seriously.
That should be a country song in and of itself.
I would agree. Here's this one. I can't even say the words because it's too funny. Here you go.
Hell, I'd just be another old pile of dog shit in the cantaloupe patch.
Wow. What?
Oh, that totally makes sense. Yeah, because, you know, dog shit and cantaloupes.
Yeah.
And the way those two things interact with one another.
Another old, what do you say? Another old shit in a cantaloupe patch.
Another pile of dog shit.
Dog shit. Yeah, there you go. All right. How big of a dick is Scott Glenn's character? Here's how big.
Pack it.
No.
Pack that shit.
Dude.
I love that.
Did you hear the slap, though? I want to hear that slap one more time.
Pack it.
No.
Jeez.
Okay, that was leather cracking whip. That was not a hand on a face. Right.
But she played it. She played it good because she spun all the way around when she got slapped.
And she picked it up, didn't she? She picked up those cigarettes. See?
She did. Oh, well, she picked them up, threw it at him, and then she got the go down and get it again.
Yeah,
that was, I hate that. I don't like that.
That was disturbing.
Even when it's portrayed in an old movie where that was maybe more acceptable, I just freaking hate it. All right, last thing. This is Pam admitting she's something.
Look, I'm a shit. I'm not that big a shit.
I'm a shit.
But I'm not that big a
shit. Is she a shit in a cantaloupe patch?
No, that's what Bill is, or Bob, or whatever.
That was the entire reasoning for her just letting him go back to someone that he clearly shouldn't be with. Bizarre.
This is the guy. Here's my impression of the guy at Applebee's next to me last night at the bar.
Just get me a beer.
All right, there you go. Mm.
I always forget, man. Utah and Applebee's. What's up with that?
They're all over the place here. There's too many of them, and they're gross. I don't like them at all.
It's weird.
It's not just Applebee's. There's a million restaurants, and they are huge. If you have a franchise with a family restaurant, you're going to make bank in Utah because there's a billion kids and families and everybody.
The last time I saw a family with one father and three or four mothers, was in an Applebee's in St. George, Utah. And I just remember thinking, first of all, what am I doing here? Why did I go to Applebee's in St. George? This is dumb.
All right.
But secondly, I remember thinking, you know, they could have gone to the Applebee's across the street. This is just luck.
Yeah. There's one on every corner. It's like 7-Elevens. Actually, I only know of one within decent driving distance of me, but yeah.
Does Applebee's have a frequent Applebee card, like a frequent Riblets card?
I think they kind of do. They got some kind of card. Yeah, I think they do, actually. I don't have it, but I like Chili's. I'm more of a Chili's man. Yeah, yet. Right.
Tell us about Chili's. Why is Chili's better?
I like Chili's better.
Their food is actually good. That's the big difference.
Yeah, that's probably it. I also like kind of fake Tex-Mex kind of food, and they have these chips, like their tortilla chips are amazing, and their quesos are
so greasy and salty. It's terrible, but they're delicious.
They're delicious. Yeah, they're really good. I haven't had them in a while, but they're really good.
All right, I'm going to Chili's.
Go check it out. To Chili's.
I went to Village Inn yesterday for breakfast with the kids, and that was okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a place that still exists?
Yeah, that wasn't the worst place I'd ever been.
Turning into VIs. They're going the KFC route and hipping up with changing their name to VI.
Yeah, like IHOP and Chili.
And Treasure Island, thanks a lot.
Yeah, TI, yeah. Before too long, they're just going to be called Six.
Yeah, Six! Y'all want to eat at Six? I don't know why everyone's a country bumpkin today.
No, I was thinking Five.
It is time for this. It's the it's the checklist. Today's film sack checklist is this. Nothing matters more than a mechanical bull. Check. Someone is always on a fake bull. Check. Scott Glenn is a super dick. Check. Trek super stuff. Dick. He's the one. Remember, this guy I saw at the airport a number of years ago and was so sure people would mob him when he got off the plane that he was wearing an overcoat and he ran past everyone, but nobody cared. Nobody was
interested. Can I interrupt the checklist?
Yeah. Who was that?
I want to interrupt the checklist. Scott Glenn. Now think about how good he looked in this movie.
He looked great.
How you would love to have his body for a day.
Oh, he was ripped.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He was 39 when he made this movie.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it is not impossible, people.
No, it can be done. You can totally be done. But that guy, he's cool now. I like every... He was... Mm-hmm. I loved him in The Leftovers specifically. I thought he was really, really good.
Oh, yeah, right.
Great on Daredevil. Just
Daredevil,
keep making movies there, Scott Glenn. It's not a problem, buddy. Go watch Silverado. I implore you. Star Trek stuff. Never got anything from Daryl on this one. Don't know why. What's up with that? Maybe there just wasn't anything good.
You know, maybe you watched the wrong cowboy movie.
Maybe. I don't know. But I was trying to think if I could figure out any in my head, and I couldn't assign any names to
Star Trek stuff. I was going to be called on to do this.
You look that up while I do a soundtrack grade. I'd give it an RG for really good for the genre. I think it's an important distinction. If you're into what country was doing then... and a little bit of, you know, adult contemporary, then this movie's got you covered, I think. It was all right. I liked it. You know? Moments.
It definitely had an undeniable flavor.
I would totally buy the soundtrack. Not a big country fan, but just that slice of, you know, like I said, 80s AM pop radio.
It's a specific slice, too, isn't it?
It really is. If you threw in... Love a Rainy Night by Eddie Rabbit, then I feel like I couldn't not buy it.
Right. What were they, I Love a Rainy Night.
The Oak Ridge Boys were big then too, weren't they?
Oh yeah, Elvira, right around
Elvira.
That same time.
Elvira, oh that song.
Juice Newton.
Juice Newton, dude. Worst cookie I ever had was a Juice Newton.
Aww.
Terrible Newton.
All those pits in the middle.
The worst. They'll give you the runny butt. All right. Time for... Actually, Randy, did you find any connections? Anything at all?
No. Okay. That's weird.
Maybe that's why I didn't.
I don't see any mail from Daryl either, so that it is odd.
Yeah, he never sent anything, so I don't know what's up with that. I would now point everyone's attention to the Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 140 characters or less. Let's start with Randy.
Urban Cowboy. John Travolta plays a young asshole who goes to Club Asshole, meets several other assholes... marries a woman he just met, hates her, cheats on her, then dies tragically. Come on. I shouldn't have to fix the movie.
You shouldn't have to. Then also with us, with his thing, is Brian Dunaway. Sorry.
Oh, Urban Cowboy. Like, McDonald's again. Did you remember my $5 shake?
What?
Shut up and pick up my fries. $5 shake, Pulp Fiction.
I never had a $5 shake.
That's
movie, I was thinking about his performance.
I like your shut up and pick up my fries, though. Finally, Brian Ibbett.
Urban Cowboy. You got to love a movie where you hope the heroine ends up with the guy who beats her less.
Yeah. You're right.
Well, you beat me a little less. I'll go with you.
Yeah.
I don't got to love him.
I didn't like that at all. All right. Alternate title. This just handed to me. Where's my thing? There it is. This is not a warranty to a aluminum USB hub. No. The alternate titles are this, What Terrible Shirt Is Scott Glenn Wearing Now? Or The Jealousy Movie.
Yes.
All I felt like I was watching half the time. Emails. We got some emails from you fine folks at home. We have two of them today. I'm going to read this one from Patrick Wolf, who wrote in. Says, just listened to the live sack and watched along with Magnum. It was absolutely perfect. Yes, please do this again. I love the regular stuff too, but this was so cool hearing the cut-ups while watching the video. Thanks, Patrick Wolf. Now, Patrick, I just wanted to make it known to you and anyone who may not be aware of this, but there is a growing number of these. These are not the first that we've done where we've live sacked something. There are tons of them, actually. Dozens, maybe. And if you haven't heard them, you should go back and try to find them all and check them out. Things like Hard Ice. What was the hockey Hard Ice?
Oh, Sudden Impact.
Sudden Impact. Sudden Death.
Hard Ice.
What other ones that we've done so many?
Big Trouble in Little China.
Rumble in the Bronx.
That was the one. Yeah.
And we've done plenty of Star Trek. We've done at least.
Oh, yeah. Star Trek, like three or four episodes.
Did we do Sky Captain that way?
I think so.
Have we really watched Sky Captain?
Yes.
I blocked that out.
I did too. That's funny. Anyway, there's a load of them, and there's a link on the webpage at filmsack.com where they're just listed, and you can download them individually. They're also on the feed. So one way or the other, you get what you want. And I'm glad you enjoyed it because we'll keep doing them. Another one here from Mike Ballard from International Falls, Minnesota, who says, hey, I got drunk again. I know you already have dozens of sacks lined up, but how about this one for a theme? You all agree on the best actor that has not been sacked, and then pick sack, and it says, and pick sack him or her.
Pick sack it.
Pick sack him. I don't think
I'm always doing that. I'm always pick sacking.
He says, for example, I don't think you've sacked Paul Newman or Meryl Streep. My quick thought on great actors. I don't know. I'm actually drunk. Take my idea and run with it or not. Mike Ballard, International Falls, Minnesota, don't you know?
Minnesota.
That's not a bad idea. I mean, Meryl Streep, we could do Death Becomes Her.
Sure.
Right. Have we done any Dreyfus movies?
No. I want to watch Jaws.
Jaws, right?
We haven't done Jaws.
We have not watched Jaws.
We saw Jaws, Louis Gossett Jr. Jaws.
Jaws 3D, right?
Have like that, it's like Tribe or whatever with what's her face in it from that that TV show? What was it? What was it called? Stupid movie.
I don't know.
I'm snapping my fingers.
I don't know, but I'm bobbing my head to the beat here.
Krippendorf's Tribe.
Yeah, Krippendorf's Tribe. Okay. Tribe. That's a thing?
Yeah.
Never heard of it.
Jenna Elfman, him, they do some kind of weird...
They make up a fake tribe for somebody's history or a social studies class or something, right?
Right.
Jenna Elfman. Oh, right. Okay.
And see if it's streaming.
Just do a search for Richard Dreyfuss and see what's streaming.
I have a thing for Jenna Elfman.
Anyway.
Of course you do, Scott. Of course.
Yeah.
I like her a lot.
Yeah.
She's
you
great.
Just want Danny Elfman as your uncle.
Oh, yeah. Is that true? Are they related that way?
I think so, yeah. She's the son or the daughter. The daughter of...
like a brother or something?
Richard Elfman, who is the director of Forbidden Zone.
Oh, my gosh.
Dreyfuss was in that movie this last year too, the independent movie where he's like a mentor to some young Disney star, isn't it?
Mr. Dingus's Opus?
So we've got called Paranoia with Richard Dreyfuss, Liam Hemsworth, Gary Oldman, Amber Heard, thriller, psychological thriller, 2 stars on Netflix.
Sounds all right.
Yeah.
Powerhouse actors Gary Oldman and Harrison Ford aim to destroy each other in this high intrigue thriller.
I'd watch that.
Hey,
guess what I'd watch that over?
Urban Cowboy.
No, I'd watch that over Twilight any day of the week.
Yes.
And we have it down. Goodness. We have Twilight down next week. I'd like to make a live on the air veto of Twilight.
Yeah, as much as we'd like to make fun of this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Film Sack is about movies that the four of us all agree to watch together. And
right.
So we're going to move on to the original producers next week.
Oh, cool.
I'm down with that. 68, right? 68.
Yes.
Is that right? Oh, yeah, it is 68.
Yes, yes.
And so there'll be sorts of all sorts of Mel Brooks and business in there.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited. And that will be our first Mel Brooks movie?
No, Spaceballs.
Nope, Spaceballs.
Spaceballs, right.
And we how come no Men in Tights yet? Wow.
Yeah, what's wrong with us? Actually, that movie is terrible. I hate that movie.
Exactly.
Mm. Oh, did you guys see that? Oh, my God. Our nemesis is back. There's a Netflix original Hot, Wet American Summer
Preview. Yes. I saw the preview, and I'm actually looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to it. I can't believe I'm saying that.
Don't do this very often.
Yeah.
But I'd like to amend my original review of Wet Hot American Summer.
I'm not ready to amend it because I still think the first movie is not as great as everyone says it is, but I'm actually excited about this show.
I would love it if all four of us binge watched this new show.
Yeah.
And then we did a film sack on it. I would really love it.
Oh, yeah. Totally fine with that.
I rewatched Wet Hot American Summer when the first commercial for this series came out about a month ago.
Yeah.
I rewatched Wet Hot American Summer, and I want to amend some things. So wow. I'm just asking, could we put this into our schedule?
Randy's a man of the people. He's come back around to your way of thinking.
He's just tired of the death threats.
I am so tired of the death threats. Yeah. Please. Yeah. Please stop with the death threats.
It's a very odd thing people have thrown their weight behind, but there it is.
Listen, Brad Cooper, stop. Yeah. Just stop.
Yeah, Brad Cooper, keep it to yourself, buddy. We're on a name basis with him where we don't even call him Bradley. We just call him Brad.
Yeah, when they make death threats, I go on first name basis.
Yeah, you got to. I'm totally down with that idea, and I am looking forward to it, and I cannot believe they got everyone to be involved in this.
And then they added on about 20 people you've heard of.
I can't believe they did that. That's really surprising to me, and that they're making a prequel. I want that to be clear here. They're making a prequel, and the actors are knowingly pretending to be younger versions of themselves.
With the exception of John Benjamin.
Well, he was the can, though, in the first one.
Right.
He was the talking can.
Even Ant-Man Paul Rudd is back.
Oh, yeah. Paul Rudd's back. No, everybody who's gone on to bigger
Bradley
things.
Bradley Cooper's not too good for this.
Yeah. Leslie Knope. Leslie Knope's back. Everybody.
I think there's an argument to be made that Bradley Cooper is too good for this.
Well, Bradley Cooper is saying that he's not too good for this.
Right. So they've all come back. They've all decided to do it. And I'm weirdly intrigued. So when is that? That comes out soon.
Yeah, July 31st.
Okay, watch for that.
We'll be in Nerdtacular. We can't watch it.
Yeah, we'll watch it the following week. Sorry, everybody. That's it. So next week, The Producers, 1968. And that's going to do it for us. Filmsack.com is the place to go and to share your thoughts and feelings in the blog, or you can link to all our stuff, subscribe to the show, all that sort of stuff. Send us voicemails, 801-471-0462. Email us, filmsack@gmail.com. We're on Twitter, @filmsack. And reviews on iTunes and wherever podcasts are distributed are welcome as well. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy. We'll see you next time. Make me a sandwich. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Get more.
Get more.